Jeffrey. I have Jennifer.
Hey, Jennifer. Jeffrey Wells speaking. How are you?
Hi, Jeffrey. How are you?
You're coming in through a second line or something, right? You're on a cell and it's being passed through a speaker or something?
Yes. I'm in a tube.
You're in a tube? What does that mean?
No, I'm in a hotel room.
Now. Hotel room.
Yeah.
So I had to talk to you after I saw the Babadook, which I waited. I had it sitting on a disc, but there's an instinct that told me to see it in the theater. So I was down at the Savannah Film Festival about two weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I saw it with a crowd around a, 10 p.m. showing. Just a bunch of folks, and it's brilliant, man. It's a brilliant film. That's only in my book, only incidentally in the horror genre. It's primarily, if people insist on calling it a horror film, which I don't think is appropriate.
Yeah.
I think it's a horror film in the sense that Polanski's Repulsion is a horror film. On that level,
It's a huge compliment. It's a dilemma because the minute you use the H word, there's a reductive quality to it. And I never approached it from a perspective of a genre. I always went into it with that woman in mind and with her story. That was absolutely my focus. So...
the character. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah, that's what you meant. The character.
Oh yeah, no, I get it. I understand what you're saying because it is. It's a dilemma. It sets up certain expectations for people. But I'm thrilled when people can see the deeper layers of the film.
Right.
It's really fantastic to me.
Yeah. So your my first thought after delighting with it was to write Mr. Del Toro and say, this is a lady you must produce something for.
Yeah.
She's in your wheelhouse. She's as good as Juan Antonio Bayona, who did the Orphanage.
Yeah. Oh,
and his immediate reply was, oh, no, I'm doing it. I'm trying to figure something out.
Did you contact him?
Yeah.
that's so sweet, Jeffrey. I haven't actually met him yet, but
yeah, he said that he's in Toronto, and you guys haven't actually.
Yeah, I haven't met, and it's been I have been here very rarely, and I've just come out to talk about some other projects. But yeah, I would love to do something with him. I feel enormous amount of respect for what he's done in this realm. So let's see. We're working on it. Put it that way. And, I have to thank you for the article that you wrote, because I don't know if you know, but it made it back to Australia and was used in a prominent film mag there. So, it's...
Oh, delightful. That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, great for us.
That's great.
Because Australians kind of missed it. We don't tend to see our own films, so they're only really discovering it now.
People heard that you were Australian and said, well, we'll see it on Netflix or something.
We'll see it never.
Yeah.
it was really good, and people were like, oh, well, America's taking note of this film, maybe we should watch it.
Yeah. And the it's funny that the I heard you say in another video interview that the original short, which was called Monster, right?
Yeah.
Which was made in 06, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And you said you had pretty much forgotten about it. You just made it, and it was good, and you were fine with it, but you let it go. And so what brought you back to the feature version again? Tell me the story.
Well, look, I have this kind of feeling in life that we need to face difficult, dark stuff. And I touched on that in Monster, in a very short film kind of way. It doesn't give you much time, but I really wanted to go back and explore that idea.
Right.
And, explore it in a more surreal realm, so that this woman, has pushed down on this grief and these terrible things that have happened in her life so much that it gains energy and splits off from her and starts to control her.
Mm-hmm.
So... I kept coming back to that idea, and eventually it just kind of demanded to be written. And, I was working on a couple of other things that were pretty ambitious financially and kept kind of almost getting there and then mm-hmm. not getting made. So, yeah, I just came back to this idea, and there was a real flow to it. And I developed it in Europe. I didn't develop it in Australia. And then, you know, I worked at a place called Binger Film Lab in Amsterdam, and there was a real support of a unique vision. Like, we were just really, you know, there was a healthy kind of criticism, script development, but it was really, really supportive. And, I largely developed the film in Amsterdam and in Paris, and then went back home and kind of tried to get financing for it.
And
thankfully we did.
Could you please repeat the little story about the origin of the name Babadook? It came partly from a guy you were seeing at the time, and then it was partly from Eastern Europe. Could you just go over that one more time?
Yeah. It was I wasn't seeing him, but I was living with this Serbian writer when we were in Amsterdam. We were sharing a house, and okay. I said, "Well, what's the Serbian name for boogeyman?" And he said, "Babaroga," which also in Serbian means grandmother, and I thought, oh, I'm not going to call a film The Grandmother. It doesn't feel right.
Why do they call it that? That doesn't make any sense. That's the word for the name grandmother, and yet it's also the name for a monster or a boogeyman. That's kind of nonsensical, I guess.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Like, what do they think of their older women over there? You know, it's crazy.
Funny.
But, so I thought, well, I like the Baba part, and then I was writing the book, as in, I was up to the script stage, the part in the story where, you know, the book is revealed, and mm-hmm. Babadook just popped in, and it sounded sort of silly and childlike, and that's what I wanted. You know, I wanted a nonsensical name, like the Jabberwocky, you know, has created a myth all of its own, and I liked that it sounded like a kid could have made it up, but then obviously, as the story goes on, it develops this sinister quality as well.
Yeah. The it's brilliant that you include a little insert sequence from this very creepy little children's book, and in it, our lead protagonist, our heroine, looks at drawings of what, or perhaps just imaginings of the horrible events to come, including the strangling of a dog and the whole thing. And that's a brilliant shot because you don't know if it's actually in the book or whether she's seeing it, but it's all internal, you know. And
And it's you know, it kind of pops up out of the book. It's like it goes beyond the confines of the book as well.
Right.
You know, we shot that as a stop motion sequence, and it ended up being a beautiful way to kind of, you know, it acts as a premonition.
Yeah.
For what's about to come. And I personally think that's more frightening psychologically, you know, to dread what's coming than for it to actually happen. So, you know, it's a good way to set up a lot of tension at that point in the film.
Your film is one of the examples that won. You were just talking about trying to set up some much more, I guess, financially ambitious films besides this. But this, the Babadook looks like it wasn't shot with a ton of money. It looks like you may do with more or less one set, with a little driving around on the street and whatnot.
Yeah, that's about right.
And it's basically that thing is that having tons of money, not to suggest that people shouldn't give you tons of money in the future.
Yeah.
I'm saying that, but having tons of money is not necessarily the greatest thing creatively. In fact, one can argue that having less inspires more creativity and more in-camera effects, as you did, and so on.
I mean, I would absolutely agree with that. And you know, when I hear of films that have got, you know, $100 million, it makes me feel very nervous.
Yeah.
for a number of reasons. But you know, I'm very drawn to more intimate stories anyway, actually.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I had a lot of protection on this film. I had a wonderful producer who really protected the story and made sure that all the rough edges weren't sandpapered off. You know, and it wasn't like a dream run. We still had to fight for certain things in the script. Because it's not your usual film in this in this genre.
Right.
And, you know, I think it's about protection. I need to make things that I really care about and believe in. So it's going to be interesting navigating the next stage.
Do you have any clue or an idea, or could you share anything about what it might be the next thing, if you know?
Yeah, look, I have been offered a couple of studio films, which I turned down for reasons, you know, that probably, well, I didn't, my heart wasn't in them. But I'm working on two films that I'm writing,
okay,
you know, in tandem. And neither of them are in this space. You know, one's a sort of frontier revenge story about how revenge just doesn't work. And that's set in Tasmania in the 1820s. And it's, again, it's got a heightened quality to it. So it's a slightly elevated world.
I was thinking of F.W. Murnau when I was watching your film. I was thinking of Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, I love all those films, you know, also films like Vampire, the Carl Dreyer film, and,
yeah,
you know, there's a Faust, which Murnau did as well,
mm-hmm,
around that time. Yeah, I think we've lost something in cinema, in some ways, you know, those films were creepy and frightening, but also beautiful, and
yeah,
I guess that was the aim for Babadook.
The Long Fingernails, of course, reminded me of what's his name, you know, the actor who played Nosferatu, you know, with the
line. Oh, yeah, Shrek. Not Shrek.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Max Shrek, I believe.
Yeah, it is. It's Max Shrek, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're such iconic images, you know, they're emblazoned in your mm-hmm. mind after mm-hmm. seeing them a couple of times. So
the fact that you've been offered a couple of things means that the people in production circles know about Babadook, know that you're the real thing. And they're offering you stuff because they know that you have good chops. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, and yeah. Look, you know, I've been brought out here this time by some people who want to work with me. It like there's a lot of life has changed in that way, but I still, you know, I've made a commitment to making good films that I care about.
Sure.
So
sure.
I'm just choosing very carefully.
Yeah.
And there's a few things that are coming up that sound really exciting, so I feel like, you know, getting closer.
Right. Well, I got to get down to see The Gambler. I'm afraid I have to jump in the shower, but I think you're the greatest. I think you're the new Roman Polanski, and
oh my God,
the new F.W. Murnau, and you're the new Juan Antonio Bayona, and I think all great things should come your way. So it's wonderful to encounter.
Thanks so much for your support. It's terrific.
Yeah, we'll talk again soon. Maybe you know, and you should visit when you meet up with Guillermo. You got to go out to his house of horrors.
Yeah,
out there
look, I mean, it's been so crazy this visit. You know, I haven't had any time at all, but I do hope. I'd love to meet you one day, and I do hope to get to see Gamma eventually as
yeah.
well,
yeah.
you know, next time.
Okay, well, lovely to speak with you, and here's to the future.
Yeah, likewise, Jeffrey, and I hope the Gambler's good.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Ciao. Yeah. Bye.